Hi, my name is Teal, and I'm your host for the SweatNet Be Amazing podcast, where we share stories of amazing women who live in our communities. My hope is that you will feel encouraged and inspired after listening to each episode. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Be Amazing podcast. This is on SweatNet, and I'm your host, Seal, and I am so glad that you've joined me today. And I know for me, podcasts are great when I am running. So like when I go outside to run or even when I walk, I love to put on a podcast just to fuel my mind and really connect with other people. I really connect with other people that way. And it just helps fuel my soul. So I hope that this is doing the same for you, whether you are running, walking, whether you're driving in your car or you're at home working, whatever it is, I hope that you walk away with a takeaway from each incredible conversation. And this week is no different. This week, I really feel like it's going to build your faith. I know that that's what it did for me, and I just really believe that that's going to be the takeaway from this inspiring conversation. So hang on, because we're going to get to that in just a minute. But first, I want to invite you to join me. Come out for dinner. We're all going to meet at Sulfic Punch Brewing on Thursday, April 7th at 6:30 p.m. It's going to be a time to connect. It's going to be the start of the Be Amazing community that we'll be meeting once a month. It'll be the second Thursday of every month, and the first one is April 7th. So I invite you to come out and join us. Again, we're going to have dinner. It's going to be fun conversation. It's going to be just a way to connect and encourage one another. So for more information, you can reach out to me by email. It's seal@gmail.com, or you can just go to Instagram and send me a DM at itsealsmart. So I hope that you can join us. And if you can't join us for this one, please come out for another one. Okay, so let's talk about my guest. Her name is Lori Keaton, and she is an attorney here in Charlotte. For over two decades, she has advocated for police officers and other municipal employees both in and out of the courtroom. She also assists entrepreneurs with their business needs, including the development and implementation of risk management strategies so they can focus on running their businesses. Lori has faced battles in the courtroom and in her personal life. She shares about the day before arguing her biggest case in her career was the day she received the call she had cancer. However, her tenacity and courage that make her a force to be reckoned with in the courtroom served her well in the battle against cancer. She shares the parallels between fighting in a case and fighting a serious illness. You need an amazing team, you need a lot of courage, and you need, above everything else, a lot of faith in God, which will carry you through it all. Stay tuned for this incredible conversation with Lori. Welcome to the show, Lori. I'm so glad to have you here today.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. I'm honored to get to be in your presence. You're doing such, to use your word, amazing things for our community and for women. And it's just so great to be here. So thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. And I was so thrilled to meet you because you've done a lot for our community as well. And you represent women and strong women and women in business. So you're pretty amazing yourself. But before we get into all of that and like your story, share with everyone a little bit about who you are.
Sure. So I'm Lori Keaton. I am an attorney here in Charlotte. And just to give you a little background on myself, I was born and raised in Jackson, Mississippi. And I know how did I get here? So I grew up in Jackson and went to high school there, graduated there. And my mother and stepfather wanted to move to Florida after that, and I have two sisters as well, but I was going to move to Florida with my mom and stepdad, so I ended up going to college and law school in Florida. Went to Stetson University in DeLand, Florida, which is small town, small school, and then went to the University of Florida for law school. And then, as you do when you're in your early 20s, after law school, I came to visit some girlfriends in Charlotte for a week and decided, oh, I really like this town. I think I'll move here. So sent out 50 resumes and got one interview, and that interview worked out. And so moved to a town I had been to one time and knew three people. And here I am 20 plus years later, still loving Charlotte. So things have a way of working out sometimes when you make really impulsive decisions.
I love that you just took a shot to come here. And then you've seen the city change and grow since you've moved here. For sure.
Dramatically. I love Charlotte, loved it then, but love it even more now. We have been so fortunate to have so many great things happen in our city, and really, you know, it just keeps getting better.
Absolutely. It is such a beautiful place, and the people here are amazing. And I'm thankful to finally cross paths with you. We know similar people now, like Emily is who connected us, which was just crazy awesome. But I want to go back to when you started as an attorney. Is this something that you always knew you wanted to do?
Well, it's kind of funny. You know, I grew up in a family. My mother was an English teacher. And so she kind of had always, I think, and she gave me the love of reading and writing. Obviously, you can imagine with an English teacher in your house, you better love reading and writing. And then I had my stepfather who came along when I was about 13. God love him. To go into any family with a 13-year-old, that shows you how much he loved my mother. Let's put it that way. So he brought in that love of the law and taught me so much about just what being a lawyer meant. And then I had sisters. So that, of course, helped me hone my love of arguing very well. So I think everyone in the family played a role in my becoming a lawyer. I was always very interested in the power of persuasion and using your words and using your writing to persuade people. It's funny, on my website, LoriKeatonLaw.com, I have a letter I actually wrote. This is just so funny looking back, but I was 12 years old, and a girlfriend and I don't know, this will show my age, but for those of you who are similar in age to me, you will remember back in the day of like Tiger Beat and all those magazines we would buy. In the back, they would advertise things, just crazy things, and she and I came across the Get Him system, and back then, we did not have boyfriends, and we thought, well, we want to get this Get Him system. You pay like $6, and it's a book, and they guaranteed you'd have a boyfriend within, I think it was 14 days. And we were like, we're going to use our money and get this Get Him system. So we wrote our filled the form out, sent our money. Well, we did not get our boyfriends within 14 days. And I was furious. So I sent them this strongly worded letter about how the system didn't work. And it was negligence on their part that they were advertising this system and it did not work. And we wanted our money back, and we wanted our $2 that we paid for the rush shipping, or we were going to sue them. And so I think that was, my mom said, when I saw that letter, I knew for sure you were going to be a lawyer. But for the record, we did get our money back. So that was like my first victory. I just wanted that clear. But I do think that that was a sign of how much I always loved using writing and words to persuade. And so pretty early on, I think it was a strong possibility I was going to be a lawyer.
That's such a great story. And it does, it shows at the very beginning that those were things that you were already, like, you already had that skill, like that and that desire to like stand up for yourself and stand up for your friend.
And stand up for other people, definitely. I mean, I wanted to use those talents, those gifts to help other people for sure.
And you're so doing that now. You actually are an attorney and you defend police officers. And I was so fascinated with that because I was like, well, how did you get there? Like, how did that become what you're passionate about?
So I would say that I really am just, I think God, I mean, God plays a huge role in everything in my life and all of our lives and my beliefs. But I was very blessed to, when I was working at Parker Posey, the first firm I worked at for a number of years, and obviously a large law firm, much of what you do is dictated by assignments you get. So that happened to be the type of work that one of the types of work I was assigned to work on. And immediately when I began doing that type of work, I realized how much I loved it. And I thought to myself, wow, if I got to do any type of work, if I could write my own ticket, and I don't think at that point I realized you really can write your own ticket if you put your mind to it. But I thought, if I could do anything, this is what I would want to do all the time, because I believe in it so much. And it's something that it's just, you know, it's taking my talents and putting them into helping people who throughout my entire life I've had such a strong belief in. And so over time, as I did that work along with other types of work, but it just worked where I made connections with various people to assign that type of work. And then I was able to continue to do it. And when I left that firm, they continued to assign, you know, work with me. And then when I went off on my own, they continued to send me that type of work. So I've just been so blessed. And, you know, as you do that type of work and people begin to know you for that type of work and you get good results, then it grows. So it really has just been a gift that I've been able to do that. And I can't say enough about how fortunate I feel that I'm allowed to do that, because it is something that I believe in so much. I don't know if you remember, you know, to me, why I'd want to do that type of work. If you remember, I'm sure you do. I'm sure everyone in Charlotte remembers back in April of 2019 when the UNCC mass shooting occurred. There was such a powerful video of the CMPD officers, and they are running at full speed as fast as they can. And they are going towards the danger. They don't know what they're about to encounter or what's happening, but they're running as fast as they can towards the danger. The UNCC students are doing exactly what they've been told to do, which is they're walking away from the danger. But it was so powerful to me. And I think about it all the time, because that's what our officers do every single day. They run full speed towards the danger while we are walk away from it, which is, you know, that's what they allow us to do. So I don't have the courage to be an officer. I'm way too afraid. But by doing what I do, I feel like I play a small role in letting them, you know, go towards the danger and keep us safe. So that is how I got to defend police officers. So that's really the story behind it. And I've gotten to do it now for about 22 years. And I hope I get to do it my entire career, because it's so rewarding. And now more than ever, they need people who believe in them. They really do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's such a tremendous thing of what you're doing and just the passion in your voice. Like, it isn't just a job. It's not just another case. It's not like you take a very, you know, invested interest in who you're working with and who you're representing. And I just think it's amazing. So thank you for what you're doing. And I know there's got to be some challenges that you've faced as a female attorney as well, whether it's in the work that you do or just being an attorney in general. Do you know, what kind of challenges have you faced?
I think as female attorneys, I think we've made a lot of strides. I think that there's been a great improvement since 1998, we've seen, you know, things have changed. I think now, I don't have the exact statistic, but I would venture to say there are more females in law school today than males. So in that sense, you hear that and you think, wow, things have really changed. However, the problem lies when you look at the numbers about where are we with female versus male equity partners in law firms. So, you know, you go to a law firm and typically you start your first years and you are an associate, or they use different terms, but in essence, you don't have an ownership interest. And so you go through a number of years, and eventually, if things go well, you become a non-equity partner, but still you don't have an ownership interest. But eventually, if things go right and you have enough clients and things, et cetera, different factors they judge you on, but ultimately, the ultimate goal is to become an equity partner. And those numbers show, though, that's where we're failing. Women are not staying as lawyers. They are leaving before they meet that milestone. So something's happening between that first year and the 10th year or so. And what's happening for the most part is that women are having children and they're having other familial obligations, and then they're not coming back. Now, I do not have children, and so I am not the typical case, but I have certainly worked in the law long enough to say that I think what's happening is that the jobs are not, they're not created in a way that allow for real life. I mean, you know, especially in litigation, which is what I do, it's very unforgiving. Trials are set, and, you know, it's like, there's no, okay, well, you had a baby, sorry, we're just gonna, you know, keep on going kind of. So we've got to work harder to make legal jobs malleable, to make them fit real life, to make them desirable enough that women can continue in these jobs after they have children. I think one thing we've learned from the pandemic, and I hope it will teach more large firms this, is that you can work from home. You can work after hours. I mean, if a positive is going to come out of the pandemic, that should be it. we've seen that. We've seen many things done on Zoom that we never thought could be done on Zoom. I've had so many hearings, depositions, all of that worked fine. There were trials on Zoom. I didn't have one, but other states did. So I hope it can teach us that there are ways around, you know, the rigid ways we see being a lawyer. And we need to work on that because we lose too many great lawyers to these outdated stereotypes. So I do think we've made progress, but we're not nearly where we should be. Just in the last few weeks, the ABA, American Bar Association, published an article and has gotten a ton of backlash because in essence, it was an editorial that sort of chastised women almost for having children. And it's amazing. Someone wrote in and said, was this written 20 years ago and just got mixed up? Because it's sad to think they would still publish articles like that in this day and age.
So, yeah, that's crazy. I wouldn't think like that they would even like that would even be considered to be published.
Yeah. So, you know, and when I walk in a deposition, is there still oftentimes they think I'm a court reporter or a paralegal? Absolutely. And so we've still got a ways to go. We've made progress, but we've still got room for improvement.
Well, I think you are leading the way, especially here locally, and you're doing some incredible things. And this leads me to, in 2020, you had a major win in your career, but then you also had a personal battle happening at the same time. So I'd love for you to, first of all, share about the case that you had and give us a little bit of background on that. And then, you know, then and talk about, you know, this personal challenge, because this all happened like during 2020, which was crazy enough.
2020 definitely gave me a run for my money, and as with many other people. So I had an interesting case in 2020, and it was interesting on a number of levels. One thing that was interesting is I took it on appeal. I did not have the trial. As many people may know, you know, with cases, what happens is a case happens and it'll go to trial and a jury will render a verdict. And this is in all cases, but this case. And then if you're unhappy with the result, you can appeal. And so that's what was going on with this case. And I was not trial counsel, but then I was asked to take over and see what I could do on appeal. So I just want to give that history. But long and short is, it had pretty juicy facts. And so it was kind of interesting. It involved a police officer who was terminated and was very unhappy with his termination. And he was an African-American male and had been with the police department for a number of years, and had an on-again, off-again relationship with a white female. And he sued and said that he was discriminated against based on his race and his sex. And so a number of things came out in the trial, including that she had accused him of rape and that all of his disciplinary history came out showing that he had been disciplined for lateness, for all kinds of things, for lying, for doing things police officers aren't supposed to do, like pulling other people. You can imagine if you had a friend who's a police officer, people asking him to check, you know, get tickets fixed or look for records and just all kinds of different things. And so it was pretty salacious testimony. And of course, one thing in a case you have to have is a comparator, meaning for you to say your discipline was unfair and your termination was unfair, well, we need to look at how other people were treated. And so in his case, it was a federal case, a jury of all women, which is unusual in itself, but the jury ended up being all women. A jury of all women found that he was discriminated against, not based on his race, but based on his sex. And they compared him to the woman he'd had the relationship with and said he was treated unfairly compared to how she was treated. And they awarded him $125,000. Well, that's not that much in the big scheme of life. The judge then awarded him back pay, front pay, attorney's fees, et cetera. The ultimate award was about $2 million. That's a lot of money.
That's no joke.
You can imagine. So I got called in after the fact and they said, can you go in and try to appeal this? It's very hard to appeal a case. You can imagine once a jury speaks, courts are very hesitant to undo what a jury does because we have a lot of respect for a jury's decision. So my hope when I got the case was to hopefully get a new trial. That would probably be kind of the best case scenario. Well, so I was working on that. And it's very unusual in the Fourth Circuit to get an oral argument. An oral argument is where, kind of like what we're doing, but there are three judges who are like literally interrupting you, asking you questions, full hostile. I mean, you know, they're, why do you think that? Why would we change things? You know, it's a little stressful. And a lot of attorneys never have an oral argument in front of the Fourth Circuit. So it requires a lot of preparation and it's stressful. And I had just had, I was feeling great and all of that, but had had a biopsy the week before because I'd been having some bleeding and some vaginal bleeding, but didn't think a thing about it, honestly. I was 47, so I just thought I was getting ready to go through menopause, to be honest. Went to a gynecologist, first time I had ever been to her, because my gynecologist had retired, and I literally picked this person at random. I went online and just thought, oh, who has an opening? And Dr. Ebony Parsons happened to have an opening, and she looked good. She was at Novant. So I went to her. She was seemed very nice. And she just said, 99 chances out of 100, it's nothing, but we'll just do a biopsy to be sure. Day I'm getting ready for my oral argument, I get a phone call, and she tells me that I have cancer. I was stunned. I felt great. I have no history of endometrial cancer in my family, nothing like that. So it was one of those calls where you just keep saying to the person over, I kept saying, I have cancer. You know, I just kept thinking this has to be a mistake. She called the wrong person. It was just really shocking. And not only did I have cancer, but she said I had a very aggressive form of endometrial cancer. So it was sort of a whirlwind because I'm trying to prep for this argument, and as silly as it may sound, this is one of the most significant arguments of my career. I have a client who has $2 million at stake, and you know, there's nothing I can do about the cancer in that moment. And I have to try and somehow compartmentalize that moment and get through that oral argument the next day. So it was a really difficult 24 hours, one of the hardest of my life. And to be honest, I just prayed, God, let me do my best in this for my client. Help me to like just be at peace for this next 24 hours and get through it. So I did my very best and I got through that argument. And then the next day I went and had the appointment with the oncologist. And the oncologist was amazing. Her name was, my oncologist was Dr. Snyder, who was also at Novant. And I was told I did have an aggressive cancer and I would need to have surgery as quickly as possible. So from my diagnosis to my surgery was 6 days. And so just to sort of not go into too much detail, everything happened very fast. I was immediately getting scanned and tested. And the important thing that she told me was, you know, you need to realize you have a grade 3, which anybody's talked cancer before knows grade 3 is the most aggressive. Well, it's most aggressive of this kind of cancer. But you need to focus on the fact that you could have a low stage still. And it was really important. I think it's kind of a lesson in life. And I really credit Kelly Snyder for presenting in that way. You know, to tell somebody, here's the bad news, but let's have something good to focus on too. And let's hope for the best and the worst kind of thing. And that's what we did. And that's kind of how I got through the next 6 days. You know, was just hoping for the best that it could be, if it could be, you know, she kept saying stage is more important than grade. So we could be grade 3, stage 1, and it could still be a good outcome. So it's exactly what we hoped for and prayed for. And my mom flew into town immediately and we got through it. And that is exactly what I had. And ultimately I had radiation and I went through it all. That all happened by December 30th, I had had everything. So we're talking 6 weeks for everything to happen. And so what I would say to everyone, just it's become very important to me because I didn't know anything about endometrial cancer. I don't know if the people listening know about endometrial cancer, but I think it's really important for people to know that you are not screened for endometrial cancer. It is not like cervical cancer. You do not go in and your doctor looks for endometrial cancer. It's not picked up by a pap smear. It's not like that. It is the most common symptom of endometrial cancer is bleeding. So the struggle is that it's usually mistaken for perimenopause. And so a lot of cases go misdiagnosed. are men. You know, that's very common. So you need to be on the lookout. I'm so sorry. And I'm in a Facebook group of people, and I will tell you, there are many people on there who had no idea. There are oncology nurses in my group who say, I had no idea. It is something that people are not educated on at all. And so you just want to be very careful of this. The burden really is on you as the patient, and they don't talk about it. So you need to look for this. And if your doctor says to you, I think it's perimenopause, I would really encourage you to push very hard for a biopsy. Because in my case, if they had told me to wait 6 months, it's very likely it would have been a very different outcome, they told me. I mean, my oncologist said, you have no idea that she probably saved your life. And, you know, you look back at the irony of Dr. Ebony Parsons deserves so much credit. Here she was, a doctor who had never seen me before. And she, I mean, you know, and again, in this support group, I see how many people are at grades, at stages 3 and 4, which is a very much more serious issue. And it's because their doctors waited. It's because they went to people who said, hey, let's watch it for 6 months and you come back. So I would just encourage people, and I now say to people all the time, if you have, you know, heavy bleeding unexplained, just there's no harm in going ahead and getting a biopsy. I mean, it's a little bit painful, but it's so small. So just really be on the lookout for that, you know, and for people who don't have children, it's really hard to say what causes it or what the symptoms are. But if you do not have children, which I do not, that is a risk factor because your hormones are different, I guess. Obesity can be a risk factor for me. At the time I got it, I was like the smallest I had ever been. So it was unusual. But she said, you know, that's not a tried and true. Some people are, some people aren't. But not having children is the most common risk factor we see. So that's the biggest thing I would say to people about the cancer. But now, not to go on and on, getting back to the case, it was kind of interesting. I go through all of that. And the whole time I'm kind of thinking in the back of my mind, gosh, I hope that case will turn out okay. You know, you always worry, did I do the good job? I mean, I hope I did my best because that was such a heavy burden to carry into oral arguments with me. And it takes a long time to hear back on the results because they have, you know, it just takes a long time. So I went through all that, and many, many months later, probably April, at least before, I get an email, you get a notification that pops up, and I really thought of, here we go. And I kept thinking, God, please just let us get a new trial. And lo and behold, we did not get a new trial. He actually, the Fourth Circuit overturned the entire award and said, basically they decided that they would not get any of the $2 million. So we got so much more than we had even hoped for. So it was a tremendous victory. And it did feel so amazing to have such a, you know, it was such a silver lining amongst such a difficult time. So I called my mom up and literally I was crying and you know, it made me realize how much we had been through because the first thing I said to her was, I promise mom, these are happy tears. And it was nice to be able to say that. So it was a really tough time, but it was nice to have that in the midst of it all.
Well, it just shows your strength because I can't even imagine like receiving a call, like you're in the middle of the biggest trial of your life, literally for work. And then now you're being faced with another trial, literally like a trial of your own. You know, and you just put everything aside and just did exactly what the doctor said, focus, and then released the work trial. And then it all comes out to where it's your, you know, it's this huge win. And for you as an attorney, and as you as a female attorney, you know, and the system that you're a part of and career wise, that's incredible. And it's amazing.
Well, thank you. It was, I mean, I could not have done it without a lot of support. I mean, I'm so blessed to have the support I had, and I couldn't have, I literally could not have done it without the support system I had in place. No way.
Well, and I want to say too, about the fact of the cancer that you, that you've dealt with, I'm a big believer in that you do have to speak up for your health. You do, even the doctors, like, you know, you are the one that knows your body better than anybody else. And if there's anything going on that is abnormal, you're not crazy. You're not crazy to ask, and you're not crazy to say, no, I really think you need to, you know, what, like you said, take a biopsy, or I really think you need to test my blood. Something's off. Yeah. So, you know, you stand up for your own health, and regardless of what the outcome is, it's just knowing that it is up to you. It is up to each of us, that has to speak up. And that's the message I really feel like that you're giving. And it is really clear, is like, don't be afraid of that. Don't be afraid to speak up for yourself.
No, absolutely not.
And we as women need to do that. Cause a lot of times that, you know, things do get undetected, or like you said, there isn't a specific test or something, you know, that you go in and do every time you go in and see your gynecologist. You know, you have certain things that are checked for all the time, but then there are things that aren't. So when something doesn't feel right, you need to go back.
Yeah. Keep asking. I mean, you know, because you know yourself, you're right, better than anybody else.
Well, I really appreciate you sharing that and being open about it. It's, I know it's not an easy thing to talk about. And especially, I think sometimes as women, we can even have like, it can even feel, I don't want to say shame's not maybe the right word, but just that, like, it's a weird to talk about stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
absolutely. I think that's part of the reason we don't know enough about it, right? Because people feel strange talking about it, and people need to start talking about it, you know, because we don't want this to be something that everyone's like, I didn't know anything about that. I can't tell you the number of people who said to me, I didn't know anything about this. And I mean, I didn't either. I mean, you know, so it bothers me that I'd never heard about this, you know, and I'm thankful I went to a doctor who did know a lot about it. I mean, had I not, it could have had such a different outcome. And so I just want to prevent that in other people.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that. And I think it's really important. So for you, what I want to talk about, what you do right now for self-care. What are some things for you? Is it a daily thing, or is it something throughout the week that you take time for?
So I'm starting back to, you know, walking, and I like that kind of is therapeutic for me. I've had some complications from my radiation. I've been dealing with that, and I've finally gotten released. And so just walking, you know, that really helps me a lot. And that's one of the big things they've given me to prevent recurrence. The major things they've said, there are three major things to prevent recurrence of this kind of cancer, and that would be exercise, eating right, and stress reduction. And so obviously, I think those are extremely important. They were before, and even more so now. So I really am trying to slowly start back to the exercising, and just walking has begun as what I've started with, because I can do that easily and it's safe for me. I also, being a solo practitioner, can be very isolating. And so I have certain very close friends who I talk to or text with every day. Two of my best friends are in Florida, and we kind of just have this ongoing text, like every day, whatever's in the New York Post, we're laughing about or you know. And so those are things that are important to me. I generally do a devotional every day, and that just keeps me centered. So, you know, I definitely think I try very hard to, you know, have contact with people every day, interact with people. I, like the rest of the world, got a pandemic puppy. And so I have a lot of puppy time every morning and night now, whether I want it or not. I usually want it. So that's good as well. So just trying to have things in my life that bring me joy are very important now more than ever, because, you know, there are aspects of this that can keep you, you can get down and frustrated. You know, I have been seeing a therapist since this happened to kind of process everything, because it did happen so fast. And it's important to sort of, you know, deal with, I mean, you deal with the physical, and then you kind of have to deal with the mental second. And some of the best advice that she's given me is, you know, she's like, you're so fixated on, I want to get back to Kansas, right? I mean, sort of like Dorothy, it's the Dorothy concept. You know, all you want to do is you want everything to go back to the way it was. I mean, I put on weight since my illness, different things. And she said, but I'll tell you what I tell a lot of people, and that's, you've got to learn to be happy in Oz. And you cannot be so fixated on everything being perfect that you can't be happy with where things are now. So that's one thing I've really been working on, and I'm trying to work on every day, and probably something that all of us could do. I feel like we're all like that. Not everyone has to have a huge illness to have to learn that lesson. Like, no one's life is exactly the way they want it to be, right? So every day I try to work on that. It's just learning to be happy in awe, so to speak, learning to be happy with my life exactly as it is now, even if I don't wear the exact size I want and I'm not exactly the way I want to be. I need to learn to be happy with my life the way it is now. And I certainly should learn that from what I've been through. You know, I've celebrated my birthday, my 48th birthday, June 22nd. And I was like, I'm just happy to be here. I mean, you know, I may not be exactly exactly where I want to be in every way of my life. But man, I'm just so thankful to be alive. So
I love that. That's awesome. That's just such an awesome way to look at it. Cause I do right. think sometimes that we are constantly looking at where we're not
right.
and what exactly. we don't have mm-hmm. and why I should be further along right now yes. than where I am. But really appreciating just the simple things. And just like you said, I think for you, just being here and, you know, your 48th birthday and all that you went through last year to get, you had no idea when you turned 47 last year that you were going to face all that you did. And then to come back and celebrate your birthday, and knowing that, you know, you've got on the other side of that. That's awesome.
Yes. So
do you have a song or a quote that you lean into for inspiration or motivation?
So it's interesting. I do. And, you know, before all this happened, sort of when I started my own firm, I had a sign up that someone had given me. It was always that she's clothed with strength and dignity, and she laughs about fear of the future. Because I always, you know, I've always struggled with being fearful of things. And in terms of, like, I've always had a little bit of anxiety about the unknown. When this all happened, I felt like, you know, I always think God sends you messages through people. And so when, for this event, so to speak, it became very clear to me early on. A very good friend of mine, there were several people throughout this who were like, I felt like angels in this, some who I knew and some who I didn't know. And in this, when I went through the cancer journey, it became obvious that Isaiah 41:10 was going to be kind of my message through this journey, because I heard it. I was like, what it is it gets repeated if it's your message. And my good girlfriend, Chris Reynolds, she would send me a Bible verse before every appointment, everything. She would always send it to me. So she sent me that my very first appointment when I was on my way to the appointment. She texted me and was like, here's your verse to get through this. And then my pastor sent me that verse the morning of my surgery. And then there was another person who I didn't even know, who was a friend of mine's father, who sent me letters. And he was wonderful. He was a survivor, and he does this for people who have cancer. He sends them letters throughout their journey. He's incredible. His name is Von Payne. He sent me this verse as well. So after the third person sent it to me, I'm like, all right, okay, God, I got it. Isaiah 41:10 is my verse. And for those people who don't know it, it's fear not, for I'm with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Fear not, for I am with you. So that has definitely been my verse for 2020, I would say. And just even as I continue to kind of get through some of the residual effects of everything. And so it has definitely brought me a lot of comfort, and kind of just, I read it a lot to sort of remind myself that, you know, I'm not in this alone. And it has brought me a lot of comfort.
That's awesome. Well, is there anything else on your heart that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think that we've really covered it. I would just say, you know, first of all, be happy in your awes. And secondly, be very, take charge of your health, and don't be afraid to advocate for your health. And I know that we all tend to want to respect and hold our doctors in high regard. And I'm the same way, but don't be afraid to, you know, to just ask questions. And I hope that if anyone has any doubt, or, you know, that they will just say, hey, I think I need this. Because I do think that for me, this doctor, I think Ebony Parsons saved my life. And I'm just so thankful that, you know, I went to the doctor within 2 weeks of my symptoms showing up. And I do think it made a huge difference in my outcome. So I know some people are afraid to go to the doctor. So don't be afraid. And we're so blessed to be in Charlotte, where we have such a great healthcare system. And I think that, you know, it'll make all the difference. So those are, you know, the things that are just strong on my heart for people to know, because I hope that it'll just, you know, resonate with people, hopefully.
Oh, I'm sure there'll be somebody listening that this will definitely resonate with. I know it resonates with me. The fact that you've just shown great strength, and that when life throws you curveballs, like, you can find that inner strength, and you can find this is when your people, your community comes in and surrounds you, and you won't be alone.
You will not be alone. You will be shocked at people will come around you. Strangers, I called them my bride friends because it was during the pandemic. And so no one could go in with you and it would drive you crazy. And I'd say, you don't need to go to my appointment. You're not going to be able to go in anyway. And they'd say, well, I'll just wait in the garage. And so I'm like, you know, so I tell people now, go find your garage friends because you need garage friends through life. And you will have garage friends and you do have garage friends and they will wait in the garage for you for hours on end. And it's, you'll be so thankful for them.
That's so awesome. Well, and anybody out there that's listening, like if this is something that, you know, you have questions about or if they have, you know, they want to ask you about what you've been through, yeah. Like how can they get in touch with you? What's the best way?
Absolutely. I will be your garage friend anytime if anybody needs it. And I will also answer your questions. Feel free to email me. It's lkeaton@loriekeatonlaw.com. That's K-E-E-T-O-N. Or you're welcome to call me 704-575-9204, or you can go on my website, which is LoriKeatonLaw.com. And absolutely, I'm happy to answer any questions. Do not feel embarrassed. Do not feel uncomfortable. I want to demystify any of that sort of discomfort people have because there's no reason to.
Well, thank you so much. And also, where can they find you on Instagram?
So on Instagram, it's Lori Keaton Law. So feel free, my thing is not profit or whatever, feel free to go on there. And you can also message me on there. I'm sending her, it's Lori Keaton Law. So feel free to go on Instagram as well. And you can message me on there as well. And I'm on LinkedIn as well if you want to go on there. So I would love to meet people and help anyone or just connect.
Yeah, this has been a really empowering conversation. I know since you and I talked the first time, like it was instant. I was like, oh my gosh. Like,
yes,
I feel like I've known you forever.
Exactly.
Yeah. But there's something about like, you know, just women coming together, empowering each other. And you are definitely that and definitely an inspiration to us all. So thank you so much for taking time to share your story.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me today. If you like the podcast, please like and share this with other women in your life. You can find out more about SweatNet on sweatnet.com or follow them on Instagram at SweatNet and SweatNet Charlotte. You can follow me personally on Instagram at ItSealSmart. Stay tuned for the next episode of the SweatNet Be Amazing podcast.